Rabbi Seth Mandel, he's Mandel is the way he pronounces his name, has been in charge of OU Meet for how long? Longer than he would care to remember. For over 2 years, and one of the things that he has done very religiously is visit all of the facilities of the OU, and which is quite a number of meat facilities, and we ask him to give a report on OU Meat. It's a great covenant for me to introduce Rabbi Seth Mandel.
Thank you. This is not going to be a report so much on OU Meat, but it's going to be a report on the meat in general in the United States. I'll try to confine it to the United States now. To start with the OU, the way that we maintain control over the Schlachthäuser is unannounced visits. Unannounced visits is, even though you probably think that this is davar pashut, it isn't such a davar pashut in meat, because a lot of the rabbonim who are give a hechsher to the company call up the company and say, I want to go visit, give me a ride. And that's the way it's very often done. In that case, you understand there's no surprise visit. Even more than that, if you come in to the company, if you come into the Schlachthäuser and wait for them to give you the boots and the helmet, by that time, everybody in the Schlachthäuser knows you're there. News travels very quickly in the Schlachthäuser. So what I have to do is, whenever I travel, I carry with me my boots, my helmet, my jacket, my raincoat, and go in through the back door. So the first thing they know is I'm on the kill floor, as it's called. You should understand, the Shechtim and Boikim are not, this doesn't offend them, because they know I'm not trying to catch them in something. Adrabah, most Sheikhtim and Boikim are happy that somebody is coming and checking up on them who knows something about meat and is taking the time to look at what they're doing and interested in what they're doing. It's a sufficient way to maintain control in the sense that I know through my visits, which all the time I'm on the road, except for this week, I know what's going on in the Schlachthäuser. The OU is certifying that any meat that comes out under the OU is kosher according to the Shulchan Aruch, which we will discuss shortly. People ask me in that case, if you're making sure it's kosher according to the Shulchan Aruch, the other Hechsherim are also making sure it's kosher according to the Shulchan Aruch, what is the difference between Hechsherim? The difference is not Simla Chadosha. When I talk about all the Shechtim and all the Boikim and everywhere I go, whether they follow the Simla Chadosha too, the difference is in things which are not hard and fast rules. Tzumoshal, how frequently, how often do the Shechtim take breaks? Everybody agrees that a Shechtim cannot work continuously for 3 hours. The question is, different Rabbonim will have different standards about how often the Shechtim has to take a break and somebody else to replace him. This is, in our opinion, in the OU's opinion, a necessary thing. You understand, the OU is not saying our standards are the standards that everybody should follow for meat. We are not saying that. Adrabah, in places where we are the lead hechsher, we arrange things so that I am comfortable, again, not according to the letter of the Shulchan Aruch. But if another Rav is the one who set it up, I can't come and say to him, you know, I want you to arrange it in the way that I'm comfortable. I can say to him, I have to make sure that this is kosher according to the Shulchan Aruch. And he will arrange it in the way that he sees fit. You understand that? This is an important point for everybody to understand. Meat, as opposed to everything else, comes under multiple hechsherim. There are only one or two or three meat productions which are only under one hechsher. For instance, in Meal Mart, there's a Neil Bato and there's the OU. in Rubashkin. Oh, there are too many for me to remember. There's the KAJ, the OU, Rabbi Weissmandel, the Svarik Bezdin, Rabbi Teichman of LA. Bekitzu, there are every meet place, there are what's called the lead Hechshel, where they're the ones who set up the plant and determine the way it's run, and the other Hechshelim have the right of changing things if they insist. I'm not going to insist that somebody else change things because it makes me more comfortable. I'm going to insist if I have a problem with the kashrus or a problem with what it causes. But in the places that I set up the shechita, I do it in the way that I'm comfortable with. Yes?
How does the consumer know who's the lead hashgacha? If I buy a piece of meat that has two symbols in it, how do I know if you set it up and they're happy, or they set it up and you're happy?
You don't. You can ask me. Okay? Okay. Now, that's the basic difference between all the shechitas. For instance, the Neor Bata will tell you, if you ask him, what's the difference between your production and the OU production? He'll tell you, I only use shechitim that I feel comfortable with. He's not going to say the other shechitim don't do a good job. But it's his right, not only his right, it's his obligation. If he's the lead Hechshel, just like if I'm the lead Hechshel, it's his obligation to only use people that he feels comfortable with and to set up a schedule that he feels comfortable with. The OU on the meat means it's kosher according to the Shulchan Aruch and everybody can eat it without problems. But if you want something else other than kosher according to the Shulchan Aruch and glatt, then by all means, the OU has no problem. The OU is not insisting that its standards are the only standards in the world. But I'm saying that everybody agrees on the standards of kashrus. It's these intangible things, like, do you feel comfortable with the sheichet? Do you feel comfortable with where he davens? Do you feel comfortable about how often the breaks are? These are the things which differ between hechshelim. Now, if you're going to ask me, if the OU is guaranteeing that the meat under its hashgacha is kosher according to the Shulchan Aruch and according to the Simla Kadosha, how is it that the OU doesn't give a hechsher to plain kosher meat? How is it that all OU meat is only glatt? Chickens, of course, there's no question of glatt, even if they say glatt. This is an advertising thing which we have no control over. Part of our contract with the company says that we can't interfere with their advertising copy. If they want to say there's a company under the OU which says glatt blintzes, we cannot come and tell them this is a guchavat lutavamo. We cannot tell them that. That's advertising is their business. We can insist that the kashrus is okay. So the question is, if it's kosher according to the Shulchan Aruch, if it's kosher according to the Shulchan to the Simla Chadosha, it should be non-glat as well. And for that, I have to take an excursus, Rabbeisai, and tell you a little bit of history. Just a show of hands. How many of you remember your mother kashering chickens in her kitchen? Okay? We have maybe four or five people out of the whole room, which is a lesson. When I grew up, the meat production in the world, and specifically in America, was totally different than the meat production now in several things that have very high level of importance, lagavi the kashrus. It used to be, it was done according to the model in Europe. The job of a shtotrov, the job of the rabbi of a city in Europe, was he supervised meat. He didn't give a drosh every Shabbos. No rabbonim in Europe gave a drosh every Shabbos. They would go droshes twice a year. But they were the avbezdin, and they were also in charge of the shechita. He appointed the shoichtim, he appointed the boikim, he went and visited them. In addition to the shlachtois, the meat was killed at the shlachtois, It was slaughtered. That's all. From there, it went, sometimes it wasn't even a Schlachtois. It was just like down here, on the Lower East Side, where there were chickens slaughtered under the bridge. That's where the Shechtim were. They gave you a chicken, they slaughtered it, or you brought to them a chicken, they shechted it there. It wasn't even a Schlachtois. The meat went from the Sheichet and the Beidek to the butcher. And the butcher was also under control of the Shtotlov. So when I grew up, this is the way meat was done. Chickens were shechted by a Sheichet. The woman took them home. She plucked the feathers. She kashered them. I knew Hilchas Melicha more or less before I went to school because you saw it in the kitchen. With meat, it's a little bit more complicated because you have to do the treibering before the malicha. Some women indeed got meat that wasn't boso, that wasn't treibered, had just been shechted and brought it home and treibered it and salted it themselves. But most women got the meat from the butcher. The butcher would get the whole quarter of the meat and he would treiber it and salt it and then sell it to the woman. So it was a butcher's job, the treibering and salting. None of these were done in the slaughterhouse. The Rav's hashgacha consisted of going to the slaughterhouse to see the shechita and the bedika, going to the butcher to see that the butcher was doing the treibering and the melicha properly, and then once the housewife got it, that was in her hands. Nowadays, the situation is completely different. It started changing about 50 years ago, and gradually it took off. This was also the system among non-kosher shechita. There were local slaughterhouses. The local slaughterhouses have all but disappeared in America. They cannot compete with these huge factories that Iowa Beef Processing does. And the kosher factories also couldn't retain a local Schlachtois is just not economical. And so, I can tell you the number of places in America where there are three places in America, actually two and a half, because one of them just stopped, where there still is a local Schlachtois under the supervision of the local rabbis and the local rabbonim, know the Sheikhtim. In all the other places, the Sheikhtim, who knows the Sheikhtim, the Rabbi Machshir, but where do they live? They may live in Muncie, they may live in Williamsburg, they may live in Queens, they may live in Chicago. The local Rav doesn't know them. You understand, in Europe, the local Rav knew the Sheikhet and the Boydek. They davened with him every day, and if they weren't in Minyan, he would ask a question. This is nowadays completely different. You can't, the local Rav doesn't have control, and the other thing is, because of that, because the Schlachtois have moved out of the local communities, most local rabbonim no longer know what to do with meat. It used to be, if you were going to be a shtotrov, part of your responsibility was to gain expertise in shechita and bedika. Nowadays, most rabbonim in the United States may have learned Yeredeya, may have learned Hilcha Shechita and Yeredeya, but if you brought them into a Schlachtois, they wouldn't know how to check. Though even if the Schlachtois would be close to a local Rav, the local Rav doesn't know. And doesn't mean he's not a Talmud Chacham. I said very often, if a person is a great Talmud Chacham, does that mean he knows how to write tefillin? It doesn't mean. It's a separate skill. Because a person is a Goyen Olam doesn't mean necessarily that he has expertise in meat. You can't just say, oh, he's a God of the Torah, and therefore he knows how to do Safus, how to do Milah, how to do Shechita. It just doesn't follow. It's a separate skill you have to learn. And even if you know Yeredeya by heart, you're not going to know what to do in the Schlachtois. This has had dramatic implications for giving a Hashgacha to meat. Because you understand, the Rabbonim who came from Europe thought that their job is to supervise the shechita and the bedika, and that's where it ends. And then their job is to supervise the local butcher. I have an experience. I'm unhappy to tell you that I went once into a Schlachtois with another Rav, And we stood by the shechita, and we checked by the chalofim, and then we went to the bedika, and then I said, come with me to the packing. He said, why do I have to go to the packing room? Why do you have to go to the packing room? You can have the best mehudadik, shechita and bedika, but every kosher plant for meat also has non-kosher meat. The animals which are treif go are in the plant. You don't go to the packing room. You can have confusion. There has been places where they confuse. They take the non-kosher meat and the kosher meat, and it's all mixed up after the shechet and bodek are all through with it, after the melicha. I don't understand it, but I'm lamed zchus on him. He learned the Yorkshire way of doing it, and he didn't understand that it's completely changed in America. You cannot just look at the halofim. The halofim are probably, from my experience, the halofim are the least of your problem, because it is true today that rov ha-metsuyim eitzel shchita, it didn't used to be true, but nowadays, rov ha-metsuyim eitzel shchita are mumchim. The other problem I've had in visiting plants is that some rabbonim don't like to get their hands dirty. Checking the chalaf, you don't necessarily need to get your hands dirty, because you wash off the blood before you check it. But to do bedikas pnim, you have to get your hand dirty. I've been to a shlachtos, and I was climbed up the ladder to where the bedik pnim was doing it, and I was doing bedikas with him. When I came down, the owner of the shlachtos said, none of the other rabbis ever did that. I said, well, where did they check it? He said they stood down there by the table where the Bodei Chutz stands and watched him doing Bedikas Pnim. How can I testify that the Bodei Pnim knows what he's doing unless I'm sticking, unless I do a Bedika with him? I don't understand it. This is just a Musar Haskel that having... Why did they do it again? I'm Elamit Schus on them. They are not so. They were not so comfortable with the idea of doing bedikas. They don't. They're wearing a long rabbonish coat. They don't want to get their sleeves dirty. You know, no matter how many things I do, my sleeves always get dirty, because when you're doing bedikas panim, you have to roll them up, and sooner or later something gets out. So I'm Elamit Schus on them. They have to go afterwards in a nice coat to the shul, and they don't like it that they're with blood. But Lamaisa, you can't give a hechsher that way. There's something else too. This gets into more technical stuff, which is good for you also. Going to get a little bit into a couple of the simonim in the Shulchan Aruch. First of all, you should know, what does glot mean? And the answer to that is, well, I can tell you what it means, but if you're looking for an exact definition, it is not there. Somebody came to me and said, somebody wrote that glot kosher means there are only two sirchas. I said, very nice if that's his definition, but there's not a single shlachtois in the world that I've ever seen that follows that definition. It may be his definition for his own house. You know that there's a machlekes between the Machaber and the Ramah about which sirchas we take. Now, it's a misunderstanding, a popular misunderstanding. I assume that most of you know the truth, but maybe some of you don't. It's a popular misunderstanding that the Beis Yosef, the Machaber, doesn't take any sirchas. And the Ramah allows sirchas. That is not exactly true. The Beis Yosef, for instance, permits sirchas kesidron, which basically means if the lobes of the lung, if the unais, are right next to each other, and the sircha goes from one part to the adjacent part, the Mechaber allows it. He says, that's mutar al pidin. Okay? The Mechaber allows lots of sirchas. If you look in Siman Lamed Tes in the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber allows lots of sirchas that the Ramah says, however, in Ashkenaz we don't allow them. You have to check them. Okay?
You want, in case there's someone that doesn't know, what a sircha is.
Okay. Lungs have adhesions. A sircha and a riur mean an adhesion. There are different kinds of adhesions, medically as well as in practice. there are mucus adhesions, mucus strands going from one lobe of the lung to the other. There are what called fibrous adhesions. In medicine, they call them fibrous adhesions, which have proteins in them. It's more than the mucus. It's stronger. Adhesions, these adhesions can go anywhere from, like, mucus that might drip out of your mouth to something really strong like a string. Okay? These are called in the Gemara Sirchis and in the Shulchan Aruch Sirchis. The Mechaber says, we allow Sirchis Kesidron, but other Sirchis we don't allow except if the Sheichet touches it, the Bayit Pnim touches it. You know what a Bayit Pnim is, yes? If the Bayit Pnim touches it and it immediately breaks, then we allow it. Or if the Bayit Chutz lifts up the Sircha to examine it and immediately breaks, then it's also good. And the Mechaber adds, however, he says, the Ein Lahokil Bechach, in what I'm saying, that if the Sircha breaks, you can allow it. Ein Lahokil Bechach Ela Bebehemas Yisrael, Ve'in Semchim Al Kula Zu Ela Bebeidek Koshev Yerei Es Hashem Barabim. The only place where the Mechaber says Yerei Hashem Barabim is a requirement. The only place he says it is by this, because he's concerned that the small number of sirchas that he does allow, not sirchas kesidron, which according to him are not on the table at all, they're mutar lechatchila, but other sirchas, he's afraid that the boydek might not be careful about how he puts in his hand, and then he'll say they broke. And he's the one who's put his hand in. If I put my hand in after him, it's already broken. I can't find it in the Bedikas Panim. So the Shulchan Aruch says that if you're going to allow these small sirchas that break immediately, he has to be Yirei Hashem. I don't understand. You're going to take a sheichet who's not Yirei Hashem? I don't understand. A sheichet is dealing with the five psulei shechita deraisa. Again, I assume that you have an acquaintance with this, that there are five things, halacha l'meisha misinai, the iraisa, that pass for the shechita. You're going to hire a goy to do shechita? He's not kosher anyway, because you move a kavanah from shechita. You're going to hire a plain Jew from the street and say, here's a chalif, do shechita? I don't understand. Why does he say yirei Hashem Rabim? The answer is simple. If you're doing shechita because your boss, the Rav HaMachshir, told you to do it, that's no good. You have to be doing it because you are going to come and give a report to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Anyim Hadin, and say all the things that I did were in accordance with your Torah, and I'm testifying before you. If you're doing it because the Rav HaMachshir says to you, this is the way it should be done, that's no good. The Mechaber was saying, the Mechaber who doesn't allow most sirchas, he says, nevertheless, even if the only sirchas that have to be that can be broken easily, he has to be Yirei Hashem. He has to use a phrase which is misused by people, he has to answer to a higher authority. The Shoichet has to. The Boidek has to. Now, the Lama, who comes and says, but we allow checking all the sirchas anywhere they are, he says, not like the Mechaber, we're not Mechaber Sirchas Kesidron without checking them, we still have to check them, and we check all the Sirchas. He says, Yesh Matirin Lamashmish B'Sirchas U'Lamayich Bahem, which means you can play around with the Sirchas, pull them, and crush them. Ve'oimrim She'Sircha Im Yamayich Odom Bam Kolayim Lekinosek. And the heter is that if it's a real sircha, no matter how much you play with it, it's not going to come detached. Right? And so that's the standard of plain kosher. That's the Ramah. But Herzog Chaim, what does the Ramah say? Umikol mokem tzorich liyes habedi kirei elakim. She'edea lizohir lemaich benachas. Shelo yenatek b'chayach. Because the Ramah doesn't allow any sircha that you can detach to be mutar, he says, only if you can do it easily, benachas, and not b'choyach. And so for that, testimony, whether the Bodek is doing it benachas or b'koyach, again, he has to answer to the Kodesh Baruch Hu. If he's just doing it because the Rav HaMachshir told him to do it, you can't tell. How is the Rav HaMachshir going to know? How is anybody going to know? He has to be able, you have to see that the person is Yirei Hashem, and he's doing it because he will answer to the Kodesh Baruch Hu. This was what was taken care of in the old days when the Sheikhit and the Baidek were the member of the community. The love of the community had control over them. If they didn't come to shul, or he saw them talking in shul, he would already know something's not, you know, the level of Yiras Hashem is not proper. However, in the Shlachtos in Nebraska, where's the local Rav? There is no local Rav. You know, the other shoichtim are working and earning a living. They're not going to necessarily go and report that guy. That guy doesn't spend enough time davening. You know, that's not the way it works anymore. A certain element has been lost. Now, how do we make up for it? In Europe...
Wouldn't the Rosh HaShoichtim replace the Rav?
In most places, the Rosh HaShoichtim is not, the Rosh HaShoichtim takes place of the Rav HaMachshir when he's not there, not the local Rav. The local Rav had to know the people personally. The Rosh HaShoichtim deals with them like I deal with them, how professional they are, how well they know their business. How do you make up for it? Well, let me tell you a story. Once upon a time in Europe, once upon a time, 250 years ago, everybody followed the standards of the Ramah. That was called plain kosher. When at about the time that Hasidus started, people wanted to have an extra special level of care because the Ramah's requirement is based on the fact that if there's a problem, there's a Rav. The Shtadrov is down the street. Maisi Shehoya. I mean, this has happened all the time. In the early days when I grew up, people would come running to the Shtadrov with a chicken. It's a chicken kosher. The Katzif would call, the Sheikhit would go to would call up the Rav, the local Rav, and say, you got to come down to Shlachtois because I don't know what to do with this animal. It happened all the time. Nowadays, it doesn't happen. Who can drop by the Shlachtois? It's 500 miles away. So there became the standard called glatt. Glatt, contrary to popular opinion, does not mean Yiddish word glatt means smooth. As I've said, no siochas, even the Mechaber allows some siochas. This never was a place, never will be a place. It says all siochas are completely awesome. It just didn't exist. Even the Mechaber allows siochas. But glatt meant, no, we're not following the Ramah that only siochas that you can, when you touch them, they break. We're going to allow other siochas that you can be mamashmish, that you can be mamayich in, but only things which don't get to the level where this boydek might have a sofik about it. If he has a sofik and the poisek has to be meure on it, that they won't use. It's akin to the concept in the Gemara of Bosa Shehoyo Beichocha. That's the concept of glatt. It doesn't mean no siochas. It doesn't mean only the siochas according to the Machaber. It means siochas according to the Ramah, but only siochas which are easily broken. Okay? How do they break them? Well, in all the places that do glatt, and most of the places do glatt, it means that the number of siochas is not so important. There can be lungs with 5 or 6 or 7 siochas, but you take them up, you pull a little bit or roll a little bit, and it breaks. And then you attach the levat space. You put it in mayim that the water doesn't bubble out. Notice the Ramah doesn't say he can't be manatech b'choyach because then it might be bavat space. The Ramah doesn't say that. The Ramah says, you can't be manateich b'koyach because I'm not matir, those kind of siochas. So glatt means that the siochas are really easy to remove. And there are siochas that go the whole spectrum. There are siochas I've seen in a place which does non-glatt. Both the Rabbanut does non-glatt, and Rubashkin produces non-glatt, not under the OU, under a different hechshel. I've seen in places there, a shochet was working for 5 minutes on a lung because he had a huge siyacha, and he pulled, and he pulled this way and it didn't come off, and he pulled that way and it didn't come off, and he pulled the other way and it didn't come off, and so he managed to get most of it off and put it in the water, and it didn't bubble, and he said, oh, it's kosher. Okay? You understand this already is not according to the Ramah. Whether it's okay according to the Shulchan Aruch, it's not my responsibility. I know. What? Okay. Okay. The issue here is that in the standards of glot, I want you to understand that it isn't glot, everybody thinks to himself what it is. There's a fairly universal standard of glot, and the percentage, you can tell by the percentages, because in all the different places that the OU shechs in America, the percentage of glot is about 30%. Any more than 35%, you know something fishy is going on. You can know right away. Anything less than that, you can also know that something is going on. And the truth is, like I saw a shechita in South America of a bedatz. The bedatz was only taking like 20%. Why? Because all the rest was going to the rabbanut, so they didn't care. So they only took tiny little things. Okay. Questions now.
Okay, we'll take two questions because we're running over time.
Yes. I don't hear.
Is there America glot beis Yosef?
In America, a lot of the Sfaradim don't understand what beis Yosef means, and people like the Brisker want what's called glot beis Yosef, which means that not only is it glot, but the siyachas are really just drilin. You don't even have to be megalgel and bimayit in them. You see, that's not really beis Yosef, because a beis Yosef would be matir all siyachas kesidron. So it's not the beis Yosef. It's a different new standard which nowadays is popular among some people, saying, "Oh, there are really no siyachas at all. It's just drilin."
So there is available such.
There is available such. I don't know of anybody who makes available really beis Yosef, according to the meaning of the word, where there are siyachas kesidron. I don't know anybody in America who does that now. In Eretz Yisrael, there are still private Sfaradi sheikhim who do it. But in America, if you're going to see glot beis Yosef, it means basically no siyachas.
Super beis Yosef.
I am not in the position to say that if you're machmir more than the machaber, it means you're super. I wouldn't go that far. Okay?
Second question. Anybody else for a second question?
Yeah, that's it.
You began talking about why the OU won't do non-glot, and you gave the historical thing.
I gave the answer. If you were the idea of glot is that shaleho heiro b'chacham, you didn't need to ask a rov, a shayla. But in a modern situation, in my humble opinion, that's the only way you can do it. If I'm here and the shechita I'm supervising is 500 miles away, you have no longer do you have the ability to call in a local rov. There can be a rosh hashochtim, but you don't have the rav machshir there every day. It is done in the plant, and the plant is in the middle of Iowa. Which rav is there? Because why are we accepting them from the glot meat? It's okay because I know that it's not going to get anywhere near question of kashus. If I have a question, did this shaykhid, is this really glot or non-glot? I have the expertise of the shochet, but even if it isn't glot according to whatever the definition is, it's for sure kosher. He's not going to stand there. Anybody going into the plant is going to see if the boydek is pulling at the lung for 15 minutes. He's going to know that something's wrong. So that you can tell. Okay?